is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
Here we go.
Email us at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com.
Here we go.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Let's go.
Now, here's Adam, Dave, and Jamie.
Today on the show, last week we talked about players Jamie likes this year. This week, not so much. We're looking at Jamie's butts at quarterback and running back. Also, some notes from Anquan Boldin's charity event last week. And more fun with your friends, Adam, Dave, and Jamie. Who's ready to have fun?
Yay.
All right. Great white. So I have a trivia question to start the show. How many players have caught 100 passes, both in 2015 and 2016, and can you name them?
Larry Fitzgerald.
Well, how many players? What do you think? Oh, you want to name them? You can name. You can answer like this. Go ahead.
I'm just going through as I think of it.
Did Mike Evans get 100 2 years ago?
No. OBJ?
I don't think he got.
No, he didn't
I think
get
he was close.
Years ago.
He did last year, but not 2015.
Right.
Antonio Brown?
Antonio Brown, yes. Larry Fitzgerald, yes.
Not Landry. Landry didn't get 100 last year.
Nope.
I'm going to give you guys like 15 more seconds. Everybody
did Tajay
out there,
do it?
Hope you had a great weekend. Tajay? You got 5 seconds. Well, you
Julio.
Know what? I'm going to just
Julio didn't do it last year.
I'm going to cut you off now. You got it right. Only 2 players, Antonio Brown and Larry Fitzgerald. Isn't that crazy? Larry Fitzgerald, 107 catches, 109 catches, I think, in the last 2 years. And, Jamie, you caught up with him, right, last week?
I did.
How was that?
I caught him.
It's not that fast anymore.
It was great. It was great. I heard a very funny story that, I will not share on the show. The between him and Anquan Boldin, a little friendly back and forth that they like to remind each other of. But it was good. He was great. The story's on the site, so you can see basically what he said. But he was great talking about coming out of, or not retiring. I was gonna say coming out of retirement, but not retiring. And his hopes for both John Brown and J.J. Nelson, which I thought were interesting.
All right, cool. So we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. I think as we get closer and closer to the NFL draft, we'll talk about it probably on every episode at the top. So maybe, or maybe at some point, let's talk about our draft rumor of the day. And it comes from our Jason Lockenfora. Lockenfora thinks based on what he's heard that Leonard Fournette is going in the top 5. The top 5 picks belong to Cleveland, San Francisco, Chicago, Jacksonville, and Tennessee. And this is straight from Jason's column. I hear the big back out of LSU is increasingly being viewed as a best-of-breed player in this draft, a true blue chipper, and he is being considered at the highest reaches of the first round. So let's talk about that. Top 5, you would probably eliminate San Francisco, Chicago, and Tennessee, I would think?
Yes.
Cleveland, he said, is in play, although it would really be surprising at number 1. And then, obviously, Jacksonville at number 4. Big circle
Dang.
There.
It seems too obvious that Jacksonville is where he ends up.
I mean, you read mock drafts. You know, there are some teams, some people that have had Jacksonville taking Fournette there. Mm-hmm. It's a glaring need for them, given the fact that there's not a quarterback who's going to be better than Blake Bortles right now, as if it would seem. There's also a very strong defense that's in place that they've built that should get better this year with the moves that they made. There's not an offensive lineman I think that would make sense for.
Not at 4.
And you think about it, the biggest X factor for all of this is Tom Coughlin, because he's drafted a running back in the first round before with Fred Taylor. He is of the mindset, based on his age, to win now. And that would sort of help a struggling quarterback in a struggling passing game, is a run game that could take some pressure off of him. So I would be surprised if they didn't take Fournette at this point, to be honest with you, because I don't think that there's anybody there that could be a difference maker for them right away. There are great players that will help them. I just don't see something that fits the need of what they are. They are not tied at all. Tom Coughlin's not tied at all to T.J. Yeldon or Chris Ivory. Nothing. He could wash his hands of those 2 players if he wanted to.
And meanwhile, they've signed Calais Campbell for the defensive line. They did the same thing with Malik Jackson last year to add that big physical presence up front. their linebacker. They addressed it with Miles Jack last year in the draft. Telvin Smith's been a good player for them. They signed A.J. Boye from Houston.
After drafting Jalen Ramsey.
Right, after drafting Jalen Ramsey. So their corners are good. They got Barry Church on the staff from Dallas. So I don't know if safety is a very good concern. They really do have a sneaky good defense. It's one to watch in training camp in the you can't really watch in the preseason, but it's a unit that could be fairly surprising. And then you look on offense, is there a receiver that they really need? Do they think that that's even something that comes into play?
Nope.
Are they a contender for O.J. Howard? And if they are, do they really take him at four? So I think Jacksonville's in a spot where either they're taking Fournette or they're trading down.
Now, Adam, the other thing would be is, does Jason Lockenfora allude to Fournette going to one of the five teams in that spot,
no,
or just going in the top five? Because there's still potential trades.
Yeah, top five.
Absolutely.
And he also
says top five, right?
Yeah, top five. He goes further on in the running back evaluation. The signals I am picking up from scouts on Florida State running back Dalvin Cook are less than stellar, with his character and attitude raising some major red flags. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised in the least if Stanford's Christian McCaffrey is the second back selected and goes in the top third of the first round. And Oklahoma's Joe Mixon, despite striking a female as an underclassman, is one of the most physically talented players in the draft, and I would be stunned at this point if he wasn't selected during the second day of the draft.
There are some mock drafts that I've seen and you know, listening to some draftniks who think that Mixon does not get past the Raiders in the first round because of the need and the fact that they're willing to take on, you know, a challenge. If in fact, you know, Marshawn Lynch doesn't come to fruition, but even so, that may be something that they consider. Mm. Yeah, you're starting to see a lot of McCaffrey ahead of Dalvin Cook, which is interesting. And I spoke to somebody this past week who knows Dalvin Cook very well, and they were surprised that, you know, that he's getting, you know, knocked for his character because they believe in him and think that he's, you know, a good kid, but, you know, you can't run away from your history sometimes. So we'll see kind of how it all shakes out.
He might fall right into Tampa Bay's lap in the first round. And I love that fit.
Well,
love that fit,
yeah,
of Dalvin Cook.
Yeah,
in
no,
Tampa
I agree.
Love
also,
it.
He could also fall out of the first round, too.
That would be something. I think Joe Mixon's a second round pick, by the way.
Yeah, so Dalvin Cook, it was funny because, you know, it wasn't just the off the field issues that Jason Lockenfora cited. He said his attitude. So maybe, you know, like, love for football, whatever that means. But if you recall, first three games of the season, other than, you know, Charleston Southern, which they won 52-8, Dalvin Cook wasn't really playing well. He struggled against Ole Miss, and he struggled. They got blown out at Louisville. People were kind of doubting him. Like, did he put on weight? They were saying a lot of things. And then he played South Florida the next day, the next game, next week. He had 28 carries, 267 yards, and two touchdowns. I think his first touch of the game was an 80-yard touchdown run. So a 75-yard touchdown run, first play from scrimmage. So Dalvin Cook has proved doubters wrong before. He ended up the season with 7.3 yards per carry. He was just exceptional. It's interesting. I mean, I love Dalvin Cook, but yeah, if it's legit that people are really worried about his attitude, then maybe that's something that teams and fantasy owners should keep in mind. But let's say Leonard Fournette goes to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Give me a round in which you would draft Fournette. 12 teams.
Five.
Wow.
I go a round earlier. But I bet there'd be people who are going to chase him in rounds two and three.
That's what I was thinking. And I would take him there, but that I thought you were going to say – five surprised me. Five threw me off a little bit.
I just don't know if he becomes dominant in that spot. And I also don't think he's going to get every carry.
Yeah, it won't be Zeke, that's for sure.
No.
Right. But would it surprise you if he ended up being Zeke?
Yes.
As a rookie, yeah.
I don't know if I'd put him any higher than 15th in my running back rankings if he's in Jacksonville. It wouldn't be my favorite landing spot for Fournette.
But the two things that you're, you know, seeing based on, you know, stuff that you read, and clearly it's a little bit different because I think last year we kind of have an understanding that Zeke was going to be a top five guy with Dallas. One of the potential suitors for him is if he gets past four or five, as Lockenfora is saying, the Panthers are probably going to take him at 8. So you saw some things this past weekend that the Jets may consider him at 6. That would be a frustrating situation as well if they kept Forte and Powell on the roster. So Jacksonville, of those three teams, to me, would be the best scenario. But next year, if he's in Carolina, because I don't think Jonathan Stewart stays, that's
right,
a great situation because they run a lot of power run stuff. It fits his skill set. It's a great situation for how they operate. But Jacksonville, I don't know if he'd be dominant.
What do you? You're scared of the offensive line in Jacksonville more than anything else, right? That's what it is for
me. I'm also scared of the teams don't respect that passing game as of now. They need to really turn things around. This throwing motion from Blake Bortles has to click in. The playing free, you know, I mean, you talk to people who follow Jacksonville, they say he looked differently when Doug Marrone took over compared to the way he played in the start of the season. You know, maybe expectations for him were just too out of control.
This has been a franchise that for a long time has had a hard – they've struggled to run the ball efficiently and score a lot of touchdowns. So I can understand why the Jaguars would chase Fournette to try and change that. But I agree. I don't think it's a great situation. The offensive line concerns me, and Bortles under center is not a guarantee that Fournette will do it. And like you said, Jamie, there's no way he's going to get every single carry.
All right, let's move on here. Talk about other stuff. Good transition, Adam. Jamie loved Dante Moncrief last year, and Moncrief ended up with seven touchdown catches in 9 games. It was a weird year for him. We can talk about him in a bit, but Jamie says he might have a new Moncrief this year. Who is it, Jamie?
I think it's Willie Snead. You know, it's kind of a similar situation. You know, he's stepping into a bigger role. He's on the field in a great passing attack. He's put up good numbers so far in his career, not necessarily great, but it's his third season. And I think if you just kind of follow the progression, there's a chance for him to have a big year where you could draft him, you know, so... I hope I'm not being swayed by talking to him, this past weekend, at Anquan Boldin's charity event, but he may have sold me. I mean, I think this just, you know, contract year, third year, they meet up at the same time because he was a practice squad guy, his first, you know, quote unquote year in the NFL. And he's going to be on the field a ton. You know, he had over 100 targets each of the last two seasons playing with Drew Brees. That's probably going to go up just a tick. And he thinks he could play more on the outside. You know, he said he did that in college at Ball State. He kind of had to play the, you know, more of a slot role for the Saints. But he can see himself, you know, getting some more opportunities on the outside. I think that will definitely help his touchdowns. And so if he goes, you know, you want to just kind of marry two guys together in terms of numbers. Tyrell Williams had 1,007. It's not a stretch for Willie Snead to get to there. And if he gets to there, just based on what happened a year ago, that's a top 15 wide receiver in any format. I would not be surprised if he has 75,007 based on where he's kind of been. His yards per catch need to go up a little bit for that to happen, but with Brandon Cooks gone, you know, that's a role he can fill, and I think he could fill it quite well.
Did you ask him about lining up on the outside, or did he bring that up?
He brought it up.
I like that a lot better than if you asked him and he says, well, yeah, of course I could play on the outside. That's interesting that he brought
that up. The way I phrased it to him was, you know, you're getting a big opportunity now and sort of how do you see yourself filling it? Your role, your skill set is different than Brandon Cook's skill set. And he said, you know, I want to show the coaches that I could play on the outside as opposed to just being on the inside. I've kind of had to play the slot role. I understood it. I know the scheme. I know the offense. I have a good rapport with Drew. And now he's ready to kind of showcase himself. So, I think you could just like see the motivation, you know, and he was just saying things. I went through and transcribed the tape today, and Adam, you can read the quotes if you want to, because I sent them to you. But he comes across as just ready to explode with the chance that's put in front of him. And, you know, he said, he's like, I had to take a step back because he said, Mikey called Mike T because Mike T was so good last year, Michael Thomas. And I think that's kind of evident that he took that back seat, and now he's ready to take a front step forward.
The one thing that I'm nervous about is that Ted Ginn plays a lot on the outside too.
Oh, I don't think he knows he's still probably the dominant slot guy based on how those guys play.
Right.
I don't think you get away from that. But if he gets 20 more targets on the outside, Ted Ginn's not an every down player.
You're talking slots or just
no on the
targets
run on the outside. Of the formation, you know, outside the hash marks, however you want to, you know, line them up.
Right. 20, you said. Go ahead.
In that range. I think that benefits him. So we'll see. I don't think the investment you have to make in Willie Snead is going to be that high. You know, you're probably looking at maybe at the earliest round 6 or round 7, depending how receivers come off the board.
I would say 7 or 8. Yeah. I don't think he's in round 6 at all.
I'm just saying, you know, if it's a receiver heavy draft, 3 receiver league, you see those guys go early. I'm excited about the opportunity. I would gravitate toward guys. This is the same thing why I liked Moncrief last year in big passing offenses. What's the problem then? You know, especially if you're getting him, you know, and to your theory, Dave, about, you know, just kind of streaming that second wide receiver spot.
This is a guy to do it with.
This is the perfect guy to do it with, because at worst case scenario, you're getting a top 30 guy by the end of the year. Best case scenario, you're getting a top 20 guy, and he could easily fill that role without Cooks there.
Dave, I want to know which Panthers receiver you like better, Ginn or Snead?
Saints receiver.
Saints receiver?
Yeah, sorry.
I'll draft Snead before Ginn. And what I was just going to say was that I think that Snead is a good red zone option for Breeze, and we could see that. It didn't manifest itself in the stats last year, but there were a lot of close touchdowns where Snead either got in and then a penalty called it back, or Breeze threw it a little high, whatever. I think Snead had a drop in the end zone at one point. You mentioned 20 snaps on the outside. He did that in one game last year. So I'm hoping that that number goes up, but I'm wondering with Ginn there and Mike T doing his thing on the outside, I wonder if Snead will be stuck in the exact same role, which is lots of catches, a good shot at 1,000 yards, and I think 7 touchdowns is possible, which is why I would take the chance on him in that 7-8 round range.
Okay. Well, I also want to point out, I don't know if Jamie mentioned it, did you say that he hurt his toe in week 2 last year?
Well, we knew that. You know, yeah, we knew that.
But he mentioned.
Did he show you the toe, Jamie?
Yeah, he actually he took off his shoes. He put it on the table. There were a lot of kids there. They were frightened.
But he said
did
I played the whole I played the whole season on a messed up toe. I didn't know how much a toe meant until you actually hurt it. Right now I'm rehabbing and getting it right. So I mean it obviously affected him. And Snead in his first 2 games had like 225 yards and 2 touchdowns. And then Michael Thomas sort of emerged, and Snead never really got the targets again. He missed week 3, and then Michael Thomas kind of usurped him. But now Cooks is gone, so all right, we like Snead, and good opportunity there in the Panthers passing game. There's not many news and notes today, just that Marshawn Lynch is reportedly interested in the Patriots if talks with Oakland fall through. So I'll guess, you know, whatever. Where would you rather see Marshawn Lynch? New England without LeGarrette Blount or Oakland?
Retired.
I'm trying to think, where could he score? I think he would get more work if he stayed healthy in Oakland.
It's hard to say. I mean,
but I don't know if he'd get quite as many touchdowns. I think he'd be like strictly a short yardage goal line guy and a clock killer in Foxborough.
They added another piece in New England, but LeGarrette Blount had 299 carries last year. So if Marshawn steps into 199 in that offense, he's going to score 15 touchdowns.
But I think that's what you should expect for him if he comes back, like even in Oakland. 200 carries.
Okay. So, today, we'll talk about Jamie's busts, the quarterbacks and the running backs. We'll save the wide receivers and tight ends for another show. Quarterback bust is Cam Newton. Now, we have talked about a lot of these guys. We talked about Cam, I think, a couple weeks ago. He was the number 19 quarterback in fantasy last year. He went from number 1 to number 19. That is crazy. And he completed 53% of his passes. So, yeah, it was just a bad year for Cam. But
take out injury. Who's a bigger bust, Cam or Todd Gurley?
Gurley, I'd say. What do you think?
Gurley still finished, though, technically as a starter at his position.
Because you start twice as many running backs as you do quarterbacks.
But he finished 21st. I mean,
I don't know. But so, like, Cam was great in a 2-quarterback league then.
was he?
Well, he's 19th. So who? I don't know. My answer is Gurley, because he's first
round pick. I
would agree
with you, but it's interesting because a lot of people still took Newton in the first round.
Oh, not us. But it was shocking. I couldn't believe it. I think we all believe the offensive line had a lot to do with it. But yeah, he's a bust this year. Where do you see him going, Cam? And why are you calling him a bust? He obviously will be discounted this year.
Oh, everybody's going to draft him, obviously. It's not like he's,
yeah,
you know, in the, you know, Ryan Tannehill, Colin Kaepernick, you know, range of guys who aren't going to get drafted at all, right? Okay, Kaepernick's
probably no, but he'll be discounted. That's what I'm saying. Like, what,
yeah,
eighth round?
I think still people are going to draft him. You know, we're probably the wrong people to ask this, because I think we're lower on him than the industry will probably end up being. Heath still has him as a starter. And I think that's kind of where people will approach it. You know, I've seen some, you know, things about him, you know, just comments to my stories or whatever, that he's gonna have a bounce back year. You know, because he'll have the shoulder cleaned up, he'll be healthy, they'll address, you know, his offensive line, and things will be better. I don't really see that, but you know, you're talking about a guy that's not a great thrower, coming off shoulder surgery, who's going to be asked to run less. Ron Rivera is very honest at the owners' meeting. You know, somebody even, you know, questioned him on that and said, this is, you know, very refreshing to hear how open you're being about the mistakes you've made as a coach, about how you sort of view your team. And he's like, we have to just, you know, evaluate things the right way. And he said, we can't put it all on him. You know, we've asked him for 6 years to carry this team, and we can't put it all on him. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean more running for whoever it may be, John Stewart, Leonard Fournette, McCaffrey, Cook, whoever they decide to take it at eight, if they do go with the running back? Or is it, you know, make Cam put the ball in his receiver's hands? And in that same conversation, or in that same setting, Rivera said he likes the three receivers that they have with Kelvin, Olsen, and Funchess. And so, you know, does he rely on his playmakers to sort of help him out a little bit? So I can see Cam having a bounce back year from 19, but to get to 10 to 5 to 1, I think at this point, given how good the quarterback position is, it's somewhat of a stretch.
How do you make the case for him?
Oh, you can make the, come on. I'll make the case.
Oh, history.
I'll make the case with two words.
He had one great year.
Well, no, he was a top 10 fantasy quarterback for the majority of his career.
As far as a passer goes, it's not that good.
No, but still, I think that if you're drafting Cam to be your number one guy, you're hoping that he's still in the, I'll say, 8-touchdown range, you know, still going to be around 400 to 500 yard rushing, still going to be a 3,500 yard passer. You know, if you get that guy with, you know, if he goes from, what is it, 19 touchdowns, 14 interceptions, if he goes to 19 and 10, you know, plus the rushing comes to a better level than it was, he's going to reward you from where you draft him.
All right. Well, I think the rushing is going to be a problem, obviously, because they want to keep him healthy. But, Dave, I will answer your question about how do you justify it with Cam with a question, which is this. In 2015, who was the number 19 quarterback in fantasy? Matt Ryan. 2016 was Cam. 2015, it was Matt Ryan. So, I don't, you know, you say, Jamie, that he's not a great passer, and there's a lot of evidence to support that. But I really thought after his MVP year, after the Super Bowl year 2015, I thought he was a great passer. I thought he was a great player.
He's a great player.
I thought everything. I thought, I've said this before, I thought Cam Newton was about to join Rodgers, Brady, Breeze, you know,
And he still could. You know, look. And I say this every time we talk about Bus, when I write, I hate writing this because, you know, it's like you're tearing down great players. It's just the difference of where's their fantasy value versus where's their real value, you know? So I think in Cam's case, he can have a better year than where he was a year ago and not have great fantasy numbers. You know, he can have a better completion percentage. He could have a better, you know, yards per pass. His quarterback rating can go up. But he still may lose production if they get a running back that helps them out in a better way than what Stewart's given them, or, you know, collectively, whatever that group is, or their team just isn't as great.
Cam Newton went in the 7th round in a 12-team league in our last draft that we did, right after, you know, the first week or so of free agency. The next quarterback off the board...
That was, just to make it clear, that was before the news of him having the surgery.
The next quarterback off the board was Ben Roethlisberger. And so Cam went about 6 picks after Russell Wilson and about a full round before Ben Roethlisberger, pardon me. All right, we'll move on to running backs here. Jamie has a bunch of running backs in the column, and 4 of them finished in the top 13 last year, and they would be DeMarco Murray, Latavius Murray, who was 13th, DeMarco was 4th, LeGarrette Blount was 6th, and Frank Gore was 12th. That's in standard scoring league. The other running back is Adrian Peterson. So I'm trying to get the guys that we haven't talked too much about recently. Let's start with Frank Gore. Frank Gore, 2 straight seasons under 4 yards per carry, but good for fantasy. 2 straight seasons with 7 or 8 total touchdowns, about 35 catches, about 275 receiving yards. I always made the case last year that he was so tied to Andrew Luck. He was just benefiting from Andrew Luck's productivity, and one game without Andrew Luck, Frank Gore scored 2 fantasy points. Otherwise, he was one of the more consistent running backs in fantasy, like roughly 10, 12 points just about every week. So Frank Gore is a bust, Jamie. Discuss.
They're going to add somebody else. I mean, that's very clear. What Chuck Pagano said at the owner's meeting, the way that Frank Gore is playing. I think, you know, I know I heard it on the Dan Le Batard show, but I think there's something going on with Emmett Smith and making fun of his when he was a commentator. I don't know if it has to do with Tony Romo and his situation. But in one of the clips they played on the Le Batard show, it was when Emmett Smith was a national commentator calling football games, which I think was 15 years ago. Frank Gore, he's calling Frank Gore's games. I mean, he's been in the NFL forever.
Who
so
was?
At some point, he's going to break down.
Emmitt Smith? Just,
huh?
Who'd you say?
Emmitt Smith.
Was calling games?
Yeah.
I don't even remember that.
Yeah.
I don't remember him calling games. I remember him being a pregame analyst.
Or something, whatever it was.
Oh,
okay. About.
Yeah, he's been around.
Wrong, excuse me, but
he's been around forever, no doubt.
Yeah, he's old. I mean, you know, I don't know when you're gonna, you know, he's somebody you can still settle for if he's still the starter, which is fine. He'll still end up putting up decent numbers if he's healthy. But at some point, these guys start to go. And what's your expectation for him at this point?
Dave, let me throw it to you. So, of the running backs on this list, DeMarco Murray, Latavius Murray, LeGarrette Blount, Frank Gore, Adrian Peterson. Who would you say is least likely to be a bust? If I had to manufacture a disagreement between the two of you, who would you take off the bus list?
I would take DeMarco Murray off the bus list, but I wouldn't like it because I know exactly where Jamie's coming from on this. Murray is getting up there in age and certainly has had a lot of carries in the last four of the last 5 years, something like that. He's been a busy boy. We know that the Titans have Derrick Henry ready to go. They could easily make a philosophical change where they use both running backs, where it's Murray for a series, then Henry for a series. And I think it's risky to draft DeMarco Murray, but there just aren't a lot of running backs in the league right now that can offer you the upside that DeMarco Murray can give you. I hate that I have him ranked in my top 12. He's my number 10 running back, and I hate it. And there's a part of me that just does not want to draft him because I'm scared. And I don't want to have to get him and Derrick Henry in the draft. I don't want to spend that round 2-3 pick on Murray and then a round 6-7 pick on Henry. Don't want to do it.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I thought it was interesting, guys, looking back at our post-free agency draft. There was a run of running backs. 4 in a row came off the board in the second round. Or was it 5 in a row? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in a row, middle of the second round. Actually, Dave's kicked off the run. Jay Ajayi, then Carlos Hyde, to me, Todd Gurley, Lamar Miller, DeMarco Murray. So he had such a great year. He was the number 4 running back in fantasy, and he goes after Ajayi, after Hyde, after Gurley, after Lamar Miller. Obviously, this is only one draft. Who knows how it would play out, but I just thought that was interesting. I think this is all CBS people, so you know we all sort of think alike, I guess. But I thought it was interesting to put him at the back of that 5-pack of running backs.
If he goes there, I think it's safe. If he goes sooner than that, that's where the risk comes in.
Okay. Jamie, who else would you like to talk about on this list?
I don't know. We talked about all these guys recently.
Yeah. Then Dave.
Can you make the case for any of these guys, Adam?
As a non-bust?
As a non-bust.
Like
I could challenge myself to try and do it with Murray.
Well, I think DeMarco Murray could be a non-bust because he was so good. I think the toe injury or whatever it was against Jacksonville on that Thursday night changed his season a little bit, but he was great. They're going to run the football a lot, and this might be his last year as like the workhorse back. But LeGarrette Blount, the only reason I wouldn't call him a bust, I understand fluky with all those touchdown runs, is because he's going pretty late. And the Patriots really bought into him last year. They gave him a ton of work. But I agree with all of these. I agree with all of them.
Yeah, Latavius makes me nervous just like Murray. Like, I'd rather have Murray than Latavius Murray. I'd rather have DeMarco than Latavius. They both have the same last name. But Latavius going to Minnesota, I still think Jerick McKinnon is the more athletic back there. I'm just worried that Latavius will do a Matt Asiata act and start stealing touchdowns and doing a lot more than Asiata did as far as short yardage goes. He'll be a frustrating running back to get, and someone's going to end up with him in every draft, and I don't know if that's such a good thing. I also don't know how good that offensive line's going to be. I think it'll be better, but I don't think it'll be great.
Okay, well, listen. I have a running back bust for Dave, but first, I want to tell you about SeatGeek, everybody. SeatGeek's awesome. People are really taking advantage of our offer right now, getting $20 off tickets. Look, I am glad I'm doing this podcast with you. I am, but I wish I were at the Yankees game right now. It's a beautiful day. It's opening day. It's a home opener. I could have gone, and I could have saved $20 on tickets with SeatGeek. Download the SeatGeek app right now and use our promo code FFT, as in Fantasy Football Today, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after your first ticket purchase. So that's FFT. That's the promo code you're going to use on SeatGeek. And I use SeatGeek all the time, even though I've already used the promo code, so I'm not getting the discount. I still use it because I save time and I save money. SeatGeek does price comparison for you. SeatGeek searches multiple sites, finds you the best deal, makes it so easy to see. These are the best deals. Buy these tickets. And if you haven't used SeatGeek yet, you will get that $20 rebate. Download the SeatGeek app and use our promo code FFT. I'm telling you, I get so many listeners telling me they've been using the SeatGeek app. They've been using the promo code, so please take advantage of it. The promo code is FFT for $20 off. Dave is going to say that Spencer Ware is a running back bust.
I don't think I'll change my mind even if the Chiefs don't draft a running back, Adam. I just don't think he's that good. I don't think he's going to get a ton of opportunities. And
he's getting a ton of opportunities.
I don't think he'll get as many as you think he will.
If they don't add somebody?
Even if they, because they've got West and they've got Tyreek Hill.
I think they'll get
him.
I think if they add somebody, definitely, I agree with you.
Well,
but if they don't add somebody, he's their guy.
I didn't like him last year very much. Even when he had volume in some games, he didn't deliver. He was slow to the finish line. I also don't love the division. I think the three teams that he'll go up against with Oakland and the Chargers and the Broncos, I think they're going to be tough on him.
Everything about that is fair. The work thing, though, he's going to get the work.
How many carries did he have last year? Do you have it in front of you?
No.
I'll look it up.
387.
I think I'm going to take the under on 387.
Who's going to look it up first? Go, go, go,
214.
Go. Ah, damn it. 214.
In 14 games.
I was about to say that.
15.3 attempts a game. Okay, fine. Maybe he ends up with 15.3 a game. But he's not going to be – he won't have carry numbers like the elite guys at running back. He's going to share. No doubt about it.
Not if it's the same group. He's not going to have less than this.
I think
he'll be right about there.
But they're definitely going. It's a
15
it's
a game.
A hypothetical. It'd be shocking if they didn't add somebody.
I'll tell you what. Look, he had a great receiving average. I'll give him credit for that. He had a good rushing average, too.
He's not that good.
1,300 total yards, 5 total touchdowns. Can he get back there? I'm going to say no. I'm going to say he does worse.
Well, all right, we're going to go away from busts, talk about the Anquan Boldin charity event. But, Dave, I have an important question. I want specifically you to answer it. This is right up your alley. Currently,
it's about pizza. Go ahead.
But currently, Michael Pineda is throwing a perfect game, I believe. Definitely a no-hitter.
Oh, shut up. Why would you ruin it?
Sorry.
Don't you like that guy, Jamie? Yes. I'm a fantasy baseball expert now. What do you want to know about Michael Pinata?
He has 8 strikeouts through 5 1/3, and I think a perfect game.
Hold on. Wait. Stop the podcast. I got to go look and see how our fantasy baseball team is doing.
As a Yankee fan.
We're up by 20, Jamie.
As a fantasy analyst.
Except that catcher. Who is it? Gary Sanchez?
Yeah, Gary Sanchez.
He's hurt now.
Oh, yeah, he's your catcher. That's right. That's the thing. Do you think he's going to throw a no-hitter? That's my question.
Of course he is.
Down the time, so I'm about to curse you.
It's 2:38 p.m.
What's the time do you have on there, Adam?
Well, no, don't curse. Please, I don't have time to edit it. I don't have time
No, no. What's the time?
Here's what I think you should do.
Don't
Jamie.
Do
For
it.
The rest of the podcast, I'll keep an eye on this. If Pineda allows a hit, I'll let you know, and that's when you curse. Don't curse Adam out now.
No, don't do that. Okay, so let's talk more football here. Oh, ground ball! Now it's intact. 4-3 put out. So, Jamie, first of all, tell us about the event that you were at with Anquan Boldin. You do this every year, right?
Yes, it's two separate parts of the event. One is a golf charity, well, one's a golf tournament that he does, and then one is his basketball game where players compete against each other. And the golf was, I spoke to Anquan there. I spoke to Larry Fitzgerald there. And hello, Dinata. And,
hello.
I did a story about Anquan's, next move in his career because he's a free agent. He says he's going to keep playing. He says he's coming back for his 15th season. There were two teams for sure that have, commented about potentially signing him. Both are his former teams. One is the Lions, where, GM Bob Quinn said that they would be interested in bringing him back, which makes sense. He still fills a good role for them, led them in touchdowns last year with 9. And then the other is the Ravens, which, you know, if you connect the dots, no Steve Smith, no Kamar Aiken. They don't really have an underneath guy that has the level of experience or talent that Anquan still has at 36 years old. So he's not going to be a downfield guy, but red zone threat, third down threat, 50 catches, 700-800 yards, 6-7 touchdowns. He could do that easily. So is he a great fantasy option anymore? No. Can he be used in the right scenario on a week-to-week situation as a third receiver? Absolutely, especially if you see him continuing to be as successful in the red zone as he was a year ago when he scored 9 times. So if he goes back to Detroit, if he goes to Baltimore, where he has a rapport with 2 quarterbacks there, I think that would work.
Sorry to be the corrector guy. He scored 8 times.
I
only bring that up because I was shocked that Anquan Boldin had 8 receiving touchdowns and finished as the number 46 wide receiver in fantasy. And like, that was, it thought, like, we're not really talking about him in fantasy anyway, but only like 7 or 8, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 players caught more touchdowns than Anquan Boldin, 8 wide receivers. And he still finished outside the top 40. Michael Pineda, 6 hitless innings. And all right, so other than Boldin, some interesting stuff that you heard from Josh McCown talking about Terrell Pryor. What was the main takeaway of McCown talking about Pryor last year?
He thinks he can still get to another level. You know, we talked about this last week with the breakouts that I didn't think he's going to get much better than this. Dave disagreed, and obviously Josh McCown agrees with Dave. You know, he said that he really was impressed by his work ethic after he, you know, had his first failed attempt to try and make the team as a receiver and how hard he worked. And he thinks that's the kind of guy that Washington's going to get. So he thinks that he's, you know, headed in an upward direction and trending in the right way. So, very excited about him. And he's also very excited about Corey Coleman. He said it sucked. I think it was his word. It sucked when he broke his hand and had to miss practice time, but he thinks he's another kid who, can sort of get on the right page and make himself into a credible, if not successful, wide receiver.
All right.
Dave? And just to, you know, I guess follow up because we may get some questions. Why didn't he talk about the Jets? He told me, he said, listen, I can't really talk about the Jets yet because I haven't been there since I signed. And, you know, I just need to wait till I get there before I can start talking about the team.
Cool. Anything else, guys? How are we feeling? Want to read some emails?
Well, if you want to talk about the Fitzgerald stuff, what he said about John Brown and
yes,
J.J. Nelson.
I would like to. So what did he – what happened? What did he say about his buddies?
Well, he said in terms of Brown, you know, his GM or president, you know, Michael Bidwell said that they feel like they have his sickle cell issue under control and that they're going to get the John Brown from 2 years ago. And Fitzgerald said when he's healthy, and they think he's going to be healthy also, he thinks he's going to be healthy also, that he's 65 and 1,000 with 6 touchdowns. You know, he said that's easy for him to get to in this offense and how he'll do. And he said about Nelson, he said he himself, J.J. Nelson, didn't realize how good he could be in the NFL. And he said it took Michael Floyd leaving the team and John Brown getting sick for him to be forced into a bigger role. And he said not only did he realize how good he could be, the Cardinals realized how good he could be. And he said the nation got a chance to see how good he could be. And so I think that's an exciting situation for him stepping into that opportunity now because, as we know, Floyd is gone. So we'll see what happens with John Brown being healthy, how that impacts J.J. Nelson. But I think these are two guys that you can target relatively late in your drafts that will certainly help your fantasy teams to potentially big heights this year.
Dave, let me ask you a random question that has very little to do with this discussion. Actually, let me ask you one that does and one that doesn't. One that does. Do you think J.J. Nelson and his production is tied directly to John Brown and his production, you know, with the, what would that be, negative correlation? One does well, the other doesn't.
The Azer theory.
From week to week?
Sort of.
Yeah, of course. I don't think they... Listen, because of their strengths, it's possible they could both... One could catch one 45-yard pass for a touchdown. The other one could have, you know, 5 catches for 100 yards in the same week. But I think it's more likely that one of the two of them will do okay from week to week.
Or is it even possible that they both have a good season? Let's forget week to week. Good season, and it's Larry Fitzgerald who really struggles this year. Because I can't see all three of them being good.
Right. I agree. Which is why I think Brown is third for me.
As he should.
And why I'm not, like, Oh. I'm not sure. I know I have Fitzgerald higher than Nelson in a PPR, but in standard, I might have Nelson at the top.
That puts John Brown squarely in sleeper territory. Cause I don't know that there's a great reason for him to be third. If he's healthy and they've got the sickle cell trait under control and he can be on the field. I mean, you could make an argument for John Brown being the number one receiver on the team in fantasy or the number three or number two.
Yeah, you have to build in the health into your draft. Thought of him, you know, us ranking him, you drafting him, but you have to factor that in.
It's not like a chronic ankle injury. If they've got it, would you approach it like, well, they've got it, it's not going to be a concern, or is the sickle cell trait going to be on your mind when you rank John Brown and draft John Brown?
It has to be, because if it does become an issue again, you see he played 15 games. It's not like he missed games. Mm. So he tried to play through the situation. He just wasn't himself.
Okay.
And the lack of practice time, plus he's also a little bit injury prone. I mean, you saw that his first 2 years of his career. So there's inherent risk with him. So I think you just kind of approach that. If somebody wants to reach for him, let's say around 6 through 9, let him take him.
I could.
Right? But, you know, you start to get to who's your third receiver if you take two studs and you're just starting to take guys late. Who's your fourth receiver more likely? You know, this is where he comes into the conversation. And if he ends up playing great, like we saw his second year when he had 65,006, then you're in great shape.
Okay. So, Dave, my unrelated question. I've been wondering about this for so much of the offseason. Why did the Patriots sign Stephon Gilmore to that big deal and not just give it to Malcolm Butler?
That's a great question.
I can't understand this.
You know, and now they were linked to Richard Sherman, but now from what I understand, they don't really want Sherman because they got Gilmore. And I don't know why they would move Butler, because he typically plays on one side of the field and Gilmore typically plays the other. I don't remember off the top of my head which one is left corner and which one is right corner. But I think that's a pretty good combination for the Patriots. If they keep Butler and then they have Gilmore as well, they're going to be able to do a lot more with their blitzing. They'll be a tougher defense to deal with next year.
But I feel dumb, because I feel like if Malcolm Butler is not better as a football player, as a cornerback, than Stephon Gilmore, I feel like I don't know anything about football. Because in my mind, he's a lot better. I love Malcolm Butler.
He's younger too.
Truly elite.
Well, I think it's also, you know, this might be part of the thought process. They have Butler under contract, so they could be fine just playing this out.
No, they don't. He's a restricted free agent, right? Oh, they tendered him, right?
Well, if somebody pays him, then they get the draft pick compensation, so they still kind of win regardless.
Or they can match it.
Right, which they won't, but they would still get the compensation. I think their standpoint is you got to take it year to year with Brady at this point. So you have Butler and Gilmore. You have a great cornerback situation there where Butler's the better one, but Gilmore's no slouch.
But it just seems like they are not going to have Butler and Gilmore. And it seems unlikely that they're going to have Malcolm Butler on their team. I feel like he's going to be on the Saints.
Well, then they're getting either what pick in the team?
No, it wouldn't be that. They would sign him and then work out a trade for less compensation. I think that's been the reporting around this.
Well, wouldn't they be getting 32 out of it?
No, the Saints are not giving up their first round pick for him.
They're not giving up their early first round pick for him.
Oh, okay.
They might be willing to give up 32.
So they give back what they just got.
Maybe. But if I'm the Patriots, I sit on Butler.
Ouch.
Yeah. He's going to get hurt, Dave. All right. Emails. Fantasy.
Dave, just to let you know. So we're doing a very important show here, right?
Sure.
This is, I know it's the off season, but A, how much time has Adam actually spent looking at his equipment compared to looking at his television while the Yankees game's going on? B, how long has it been since he ignored the IM I sent him about relevant NFL news that he hasn't looked at?
What? Oh.
Oh, he's had to recap the podcast.
I saw that news. Whatever. CJ Anderson at workouts today for a news update. Well, when we get the update, then we'll share the news.
That is the update.
You're the one supposed to give the update.
Oh, wait. The news update is CJ Anderson is at workouts today?
Yes.
All right, great. Hey, CJ Anderson. I'm clapping in case people can't tell. Ready for emails? I'm sorry. The guy's throwing a perfect game, by the way.
So I'll tell you what. Why don't you put down your headset?
I've been paying attention.
I'll take care of the emails.
So wait, the game,
and you can go watch your Pretty Little Baseball.
The game. The game's in the sixth inning. You made us do the show at a certain time because you have to be somewhere. Are you going to stay at home to watch the rest of the game and go later than where you're supposed to be, or are you going to leave and follow the game elsewhere?
My cutoff time, there's no way I'll be able to watch all nine. My cutoff time is 3:30 p.m. It's 2:50 p.m. It's very unlikely that I'd be very unlikely. Maybe. So let me read these emails. This is from Brian. Where's Brian from?
Brian is from the Bronx, New York.
Oh, lucky man. Congrats to CBS, but this is a huge bummer for me. How long should I hold on to Tony Romo before making trades in a 14-team, 5-6-player keeper league as if he will not come back? Should I wait until after the draft, until training camp? We play in a league where the keeper cost is based on the points scored in the previous year, so Romo would be a minimum cost quarterback. Plus, I'm a lifelong Houston Oilers / Texans fan. Oh, living in a small town in Minnesota. Didn't see that. And the Texans quarterback history rivals the Browns. I was so excited to get Romo. And tell Jamie to bring back the boat.
The boat?
I'll explain that in a moment. But do you guys think there's any chance Romo says, screw you, CBS, I'm going to play football?
What did he put it at, a 3% chance? Or Peter King put it at a 3% chance?
What's the percentage that Dak Prescott gets hurt in training camp?
Is it just Dak?
I think it's just Dak.
So he only goes
because
back
I
down.
Think if those other teams
what
really
Brady,
wanted
what if Brady
him,
gets hurt?
Hmm?
What if Tom Brady gets hurt? What if Drew Brees gets hurt?
I don't think
he has a good relationship with Sean Payton.
Yeah, I know. But I don't think he's going anywhere but Dallas.
All right.
Yeah.
So whatever the percentage is of Dak getting hurt, I think
goofy at this point. You don't hold on to Tony Romo.
Slips on a bar of soap in the shower and tears his ACL.
Now tell
Jamie, the only way you hold on to Tony Romo in a keeper league is if there's something that happens to Dak Prescott before you have to put in your guys.
Tell Jamie to bring back the boat. Strike out Michael Pineda. You used to say these guys are in the same boat. And I think you said it so much that you just completely stopped saying it. And we miss it, Jamie. Same boat.
I'm going to put you in the boat of people I like to punch in the face if Michael Pineda blows this, because that would be 5 points that we lose from a no-hitter, which I'm blaming you. If he gives up a run, it'll be another 5 points that we get for a shutout. So for a team that started 0-1 and did not look very good, our fantasy team, which was a juggernaut last year, you're going to be in the boat of guys getting punched in the face.
Adam, you are the rear admiral of the SS Jinx.
Yeah, I don't believe in no-hitter jinxes, so I wouldn't worry about it.
Adam walked into one of the dumbest jokes ever yesterday. He texted me, he's like, my fantasy baseball teams were terrible outside of the team that we share with each other. So I texted him back and go, my back hurts.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's like, well, why? What happened? I said, from carrying you.
let me give you the inside scoop on that. So you texted me, my back hurts. I texted you, why? And then I put the phone away. I forgot to look. I didn't see the text for like another 15 minutes or something. But even before I picked up the phone, I figured out the answer to why. And then I was like, oh, because he's carrying the team. Then I saw, because I'm carrying the team. All right. Last email is from Paul. We don't have a lot of emails today. So please send us your emails at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. Now's a good time to get them in. We'll read some keeper stuff. Dear Clayton, Max, and Madison. That's for you, Dave.
Clayton, Max, and Madison.
That's easy.
Come on, Dave.
Is Madison Billy Madison?
Yeah, Billy Madison Bumgarner.
Oh.
Mad Max Scherzer.
No, I really had no idea. It's baseball players?
Clayton Kershaw, yeah. How do you evaluate strength of schedule? I looked at last year's numbers and saw no correlations with defenses and offensive performances. The Patriots had the toughest pass schedule and still finished in the top five in passing, for example. Just want to confirm it's worthless. Is that true?
If you're looking at the strength of schedule based on what the opponent's winning percentage was last year, it is 100% worthless. If you go through each NFL team and you look at the teams and you say, okay, this team looks like they could be good. This team looks like they're going to absolutely suck. This team looks like they're going to be in the middle. And you do that for all 32 teams. And then you find out which teams are playing the teams that you think are going to suck the most. Then you're in good shape. For example, I think Pittsburgh is in a really good spot because they're in the same division as the Bengals, who I think are declining, the Browns, who are, I don't know how they can decline anymore. Maybe they're on the upswing a little bit, but they're not great. And the Ravens, who I think are going to be eh. So I think the Steelers, they're really the only team I've identified so far as one with, oh, you don't have to worry about their schedule. They should be fine.
I only look at what? You give up a hit?
Yep.
Go for it, Jamie.
Write the time down.
He gave up a double.
A special announcement from Jamie Eisenberg.
What? You got the time now? You good?
Please, please don't curse. I don't feel like... Please. I'm asking you nicely.
All right.
Thank you.
I won't put you in the boat.
Damn you!
Never before has giving up a perfect game in fantasy been so rewarding.
Come on, Adam!
Look how happy you are, Jamie. You just like cursing.
He's so happy. You should see the look on his face.
No, well, I'm not the
happiest Yankee fan that they give him a hit.
I want them to lose. I want them to win. They might
lose. Well, you are.
You almost said lose.
I'm not a Pineda guy, but...
Baseball, buddy.
What were you going to say about strength of schedule, Jamie?
I just really look at the first four games. You know, if you get off to a good start the first four games, like we thought the Falcons may be good last year. Nobody thought they were going to be this offensive juggernaut. You know, so many things change throughout the course of an NFL season with injuries and things of that nature, that looking at a schedule over the course of 16 games and saying this is definitely going to happen because of X, Y, and Z, it's just really not fair.
No, but I do think that in the past, you could look at a guy like Carlos Hyde or you know, even when the Niners had a really good run defense, you could look at like Zach Stacy. We knew he was going to have a tough schedule placing San Fran, and I think they were.
Oh,
still
sure.
Good.
There are definitely ways to look at it and say division's tough. Like Dave just gave a perfect example. The Steelers play in what should not be a tough division. I think people are going to look at it and say, wow, the AFC South, they usually stink. Well, we just laid out earlier in the show why Jacksonville defense is going to be better. I think the Colts defense is going to be better. The Texans defense is a monster. The Titans defense should be better because they have all these draft picks. So there's just certain situations to look at and say, this should happen because of these collective group of teams. You know, the teams that, who's the division that plays the AFC East and,
NFC South.
The NFC South plays the AFC East and NFC. Okay. So there's a great situation. You get the Jets and
so does the AFC West.
Huh?
AFC West plays the AFC East too.
Yeah. Actually, Amari Cooper was somebody that came to mind last year because I knew he struggled within his division because there were some very good cornerbacks in his division and that hasn't changed. San Diego's got good corners. Kansas City has one lockdown corner, and who else is in their division? The Broncos. Yeah, they've got some pretty good corners as well. So, that did occur to me when I drafted Amari Cooper last year during preseason. It's still the same thing. Like, he's going to have very tough matchups, potentially six times.
Is Michael Crabtree, but he's better. But, you know, if you get them both,
but yeah,
you're in great shape.
He doesn't get the same tough matchups necessarily. You would think Cooper would get the tougher guy, but... All right, I think we're done here. Pineda strikes out someone to end the seventh, and sorry about all the baseball, everybody. I love baseball. I love fantasy sports, so hooray for fantasy.
Hey.
Jamie's in the unique position. He shares a team with Dave, and he shares a team with me, so
yes,
we're all in the same boat. Have a great day, everybody. We'll talk to you later in the week.
Bye.